underpinnings. So essentially, we are trying to figure out what is the connection, if any, between the three topics that are all occupying the same space in our Gemara. Now we have the concept of Ariv, which we spent some time trying to figure out, the lumdus of Ariv in and of itself, and the applications that it has to other areas of halacha. We saw that it has a number of real-life practical applications, and we'll see probably tomorrow that that's true in a sense about Eved Kenani as well. Even without Avadim, we still have a Din Eved Kenani coming up in various places. And now we're focused on kind of in between those two as to what's the lumdus of the sugya that possibly connects the three. And in order to highlight that, so first, just to work from the end, so we noted that the question of the relationship between the three being Arev, the idea that you can have a kinyan, you can have a transaction, whatever it is, where it doesn't necessarily have to be that the kona is giving to the makna. It could also be that the kona is giving to somebody else, and that creates a kinyan. That's the din arev. And the din eved kenani, where we're holding now, is it could be that somebody else gives it to the makna. And the third din that appears in the Gemara is the din of adam chashuv, where apparently it doesn't have to be that the kona gives to the makna, but it could be the other way around. But we find in the conclusion of the Gemara that that's not true across the board, and that's only a unique detail that comes from the concept of adam chashuv, that the person who is prominent and whose very presence is such a thrill that if they accept the presence from you, you feel flattered. So that's what is the operative element here. So are those three dinim connected? That was a question we asked at the outset. And then last time pointed out to the fact that it seems to be, in a sense, a machlokus rishonim if those dinim are connected. Because the Gemara concludes that after telling us these three dinim, the Gemara has a line in the bottom of Zayin and Aleph, V'chein l'inin mamona. So everything we've been talking about here in the context of Kedushin seems like it should all be true in monetary issues in general. If you want to buy a field, if you want to do business, you should have all three of these dinim. That's what it sounds like it means. And that's how some of the Rishonim understand. But not all the Rishonim understand. So, for example, the Ritva points to the fact that Rashi doesn't list it for all three. Rashi just lists it for two of them. So V'chein L'inyan Mamona, Rashi says that it's true for Arev, and it's true for Eved Kenani, and also the combination of Arev and Eved Kenani that the Gemara also mentions, but doesn't say anything about Adam Chashuv. So maybe there's something connecting Arev and Eved Kenani, but not Adam Chashuv. On the other hand, you have the Rambam, who brings all these dinim and Hilchos Yishus, but in Mecca Chomemkar, in Hilchos Mechira, he only brings Arif. Arif, which again, we know is true throughout many areas of halacha, but you don't find that he brings the other two in that context. Okay, so that helps frame the question, are these three dinim related? So we apparently have three views. Yes, all three of them are related. No, Eved Kenani and Arev are related, but Adam Chashuv is something else. Or maybe Arev is unique, and the rest don't connect to that. And all the Gemara was saying is Arev also applies to Mamonos. Okay, so we also noted a few other issues in the Gemara. We noted that how Eved Kenani works is itself a machlokes, that Rashi understands that the Chiddush is that it makes the mamon of the shliach into an effective tool here. That normally we know there's a din of shlichus. We know that Reuven can say to Shimon, go marry this woman for me, or go marry any woman for me. So that part we know, midin shlichus. What the Chiddush here is, according to Rashi, is that the shliach, Shimon, can pay for himself also. So you would have thought that Shimon can be Mekadesh and Isha on Reuben's behalf as long as Reuben pays the money. And the Chiddush here is no. So Evik Naini, that fills in that gap and says it works from that perspective also. And the Ritva understands the opposite way. The Ritva understands that no, if there was Shlichus involved, Shlichus would allow for the chassan to ask somebody else to do the whole thing, to perform the marriage, and also to give out the money from his own pocket. It's only that if you don't have Shlichus, and maybe you don't even have any kind of coordination here at all, that's where Evik Kanani kicks it. And we also saw, it's machlokas, when Rashi says Shlichus is here, does that mean you need Shlichus? As some might read it, or as Jonah is nodding, it could be Shlichus, it could be without Shlichus, which is explicitly the view of the Rush, for sure. And many read Rashi that way too. And then the question is, so why does he mention Shlichus? He mentions Shlichus because that's even more of a Chiddush. I tell you that even when there's a formal Shlichus, it can't use somebody else's money unless you have Evik Kanani teaching you that it works. Okay, everyone's clear on all those positions so far? I guess we've seen the other day, so everyone has all that solid? Okay, so what is the machlokas between Rashi and the Ritva about? Is it about Evik Kanani? Is it about Shlichus? Is it about Kedushin? What do you think? How do you explain why? And again, if you wanted to pick a point to focus on, say, according to the Rashba, Shlichus would allow the Shliach to use his own money. And according to Rashi, apparently not. The Ritva, correct. You see, that was also to see if you're paying attention. According to the Ritva, right, Shlichus would allow you to use your own money as a Shliach. So you see, that's apparently a point of dispute between Rashi and the Ritva. How do you understand that? What's that machlokas about? Is it about Evik Kanani? Not necessarily, because you could have that machlokas without Evik Kanani existing. It reflects back on Evik Kanani because it'll tell us what the Chiddush of Evik Kanani needs to be, or what it needs to fill in. But on the surface, it must be about something else. So it could be about Shlichus, right? So, or it could be about a third thing. What else could it be about? Could be about Kedushin, right? Does Kedushin require the money of the chassan? Does it have to be the money of the chassan, or is it possible that it could be the money of somebody else? That's a very strong possibility in terms of what's going on. So let's focus on that for a second. If the Ritva says you can use, let's assume for a second it is about shlichus, right? So if the Ritva says the shliach can use his own money, and Rashi says no. So some of the Achronim explain the Ritva that there's a certain svara to it. Right? That you could say that the Shliach already is stepping into the shoes of the Mishaleach in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways he has to assume the identity of the Mishaleach. Now parenthetically, we're not coming into Shlichus head on here, but Shlichus is a major Kol Torah Kula Sugya. It's also a major Kedushin Sugya. So maybe we'll get to the second part of Kedushin sometime this year, where really it's the main issue. But who knows? If you want a little background on Shlichus and what exactly it is, I recently recommended to someone who very much appreciated the recommendation that the Sefer Lekach Tov, Rabbi Yosef Engel, who we mentioned on many occasions, Yosef Engel has probably one of the most sweeping pieces in the Achronim about just what Shlichus is and how it works. But part of the question is we know a Shliach does something, and somehow it affects and a result on behalf of the 1%. So how complete is the identification? between the shliach and the mishaleach. Do we say that he really becomes his agent? Is probably the best translation for the word shliach. A shliach is something that's translated as messenger, but in the halachic context, it's not a great translation. Probably agent is really the best translation for shlichus, agency. So does the agent become the mishaleach? Does he become the shaleach in some partial sense? Does he become the one who's able to do things on behalf of the mishaleach? But maybe only in a very technical sense. He doesn't really have the identity of the mishaleach. Parenthetically, just to illustrate how this makes a difference, some suggest that there's a difference between a paid shaleach and an unpaid shaleach. Which, just for the purpose to which it helps us understand here, it could be that a paid shaliach, he's an employee of the one who sent him, and he's really part of his team. While somebody who is doing something as a favor could choose to do it, to not do it, doesn't really take on any identity together with the one who sent him. So some say within the Ritva here that the Ritva is just extending the principle in a logical way, that the shliach uses his own feet to get there, he uses his own mouth to say Hariyam Kudeshes, he uses his own hand to give the ring. So why can't he use his own money too? A lot of ways he is transferring his powers over to benefit the mishaleach, so why can't it be his money also? So if that's the position of the Ritva, so then apparently Rashi disagrees with that. Rashi says, yeah, his feet he can use, his mouth he can use, his hands he can use, his money, money's got to be the mishaleach. Why should that be? Why would we draw the line there?
You could say that there still needs to be a connection between the husband's giving and the Masa Kiddush. Maybe the husband needs to buy it.
So it sounds like you're saying that it's a kedushin issue. It's not really a shlichus issue, which you could be right. I mean, but then that's responsive here. That you're saying that don't look for an answer in shlichus and look for this to be no, but that it's relevant. So you're saying don't look for something about shlichus. You're saying that it's a kedushin issue.
Right.
Is that what everyone else feels? Do you have any other thoughts? Let's explore for a second from the shlichus angle. I mean, it could be that shlichus is limited in terms of what it accomplishes. And again, I'm kind of taking advantage of this sugya to give us a window into shlichus a little bit, because who knows how much we'll get. So let's use this, because it's a huge concept for our masechta and for Shas. So let's try to take a few minutes to see what we can learn about shlichus. Right, we know that, for example, there is a distinction, which really is found in the Rishonim, to explain other dinim, most famously associated with the Tosfos Rid, and then later on with the Tzos, that there's a distinction in terms of what shlichus works for and what it doesn't work for. So we know, for example, that you can have a shlichus by a mitzvah like Kiddushin, practically speaking by a bris milah, even though it's somewhat of a history of a discussion in the poskim. And yet, you can't say, I plan on sleeping in tomorrow, so could you be my shliach to say Kriya Shema, could you be my shliach to wear tefillin for me? Or be my shliach to take a lulav and an esra? So the distinction that you find from the Tosfos Rid and others is that shlichus works if the mitzvah is about a result. You need to make something happen, so then we can have shlichus as a concept. If it's a mitzvah shebegufo, you're supposed to do something with your body, you're supposed to pick up a lulav, you're supposed to put on tefillin, so then your body is your own body, it's not anyone else's, and therefore shlichus doesn't make sense. Shlichus only makes sense where there's a job that has to be done, and you can have someone else do that job on your behalf. So, if that's true, maybe we could borrow that kind of distinction, not that exact distinction, but just that recognition that there are these different parts of what works and what doesn't work. And you could say that when there's a task to be done, I could farm out that task to someone else. But the idea is he's doing the task for me. But the payment that might go along, the payment is a separate component. Just because I ask him to do the legwork, So why should the payment necessarily also be a part of that? Now, in saying this, I'm kind of building on what some Sfarim say, like Rav Gusman, for example, has in his Shiurim, that you have to mechalik between the pu'ulas hakinyan and the tashlum hakinyan, right, the action of the kinyan and the payment for it. But I'm just trying to also explain a little bit why that is, because we understand that these are two different roles, right? There are two different kinds of favors. If I ask somebody to do a job for me, then it doesn't necessarily imply that I want him to handle my expenses. If I ask somebody to lend me money, it doesn't necessarily imply that I want him to do any physical work for me. Right? They are, by their nature, two separate things, and therefore, shlichus, maybe we can understand anything that has to do with the work here. He's got to talk, he's got to walk, he's got to hand the ring. Okay, that is what the mission is. But the expenses of the mission, if there's something that needs to be paid, so that we could hear just isn't a part of that whole category, isn't a part of what comes along with shlichus. And similarly, if I borrow money from someone, there's no physical responsibility that is implied there. Does that distinction make sense? Halacha Maisa, by the way, I think it has a role in Hilchos Ribbis, that there is a discussion that comes up in Hilchos Ribbis. Let's say I send somebody to the supermarket and I say, pick me up some pretzels. And he comes back to my house, I say, how much are the pretzels? He says, $4.99. So I give him a $5 bill. So it's a shaila in poskim, does he have to return the cent? Because is there the penny, you know, whatever it is, if it's a ribbis issue with whatever extra money I'm giving to this person. I follow the issue. He paid $4.99 for my product and now I'm giving him $5, so is that a ribbis concern? So the post can talk about, you know, with a small amount that people aren't really mashiv, and the fact that my only motive here is not to have to make change, it's not paying him for the loan, etc., etc. So I always wondered about this shaila. I think there's a sort of pshuto l'hakel. I think that there's a very strong logic to be lenient here. Because let's say it's not even that I'm too lazy to make change or it's too difficult to make change. Right? Let's say when he tells me he spent $4.99 and I gave him back $5, especially if it's the penny, but it seems to say it's a little more than that. Let's say that I'm explicit about the fact that it's not difficult for me to make change, but I want him to have the change. Right? I want him to keep the change. Even so, I would say that should be mutter. Why? Because what's motivating me to want him to give him the extra change? Why am I feeling the gratitude that I think he should get this gift from me? Is it because he laid out the $4.99? Probably not. If it was just there's no indication in these stories that I necessarily needed that extension of the money. I just wasn't physically present to spend the $4.99 of the presents. So what I'm really happy about, I'm really grateful to him about, the motive that I would have to give him the change is because he slept for me. Right? It's because he had to go and buy it and he put it in his car and he owed it to me. So it just reflects the fact that there are two different tafkidim here. Then when you send somebody shopping for you, so there is a physical effort and he's laying out the money. So any extra that I'm giving him, even if you want to say it's not because of change, but I'm actually doing it on purpose, it's not motivated by the loan, it's motivated by the physical work that he did on my behalf. So too, it's just relevant to divide that into two categories and to recognize that one favor doesn't imply the other. That when I ask somebody, do I give somebody a mission, there's no implication there that he's supposed to pay anything for me. And when I ask somebody to lay out money for me, there's no implication that there's any physical responsibility, and therefore shlichus could be mesiachis to one and not the other. Okay, does that make any sense? So far so good. So that's if we want to look at just in terms of the parameters of shlichus. Jacob?
So for Ribbis in general, this concept works?
I think so. Again, isn't that what I see written in the post-commosage, which is why I'm saying like it surprised me a little bit that this is not, I think a couple of details in Ribbis where I think you could say a different svara from what you commonly see. So here, there's just one where I think it's the svara pshuta lahakil, because you don't have to, I mean, there are other reasons, you find often they're makel for other reasons, you know, that it's just about you making change, or it's the kind of thing people don't even have an awareness on, that small amount of money. But saying that even if it was a large amount of money, and you did it on purpose, what's the motive? Right? The motive is not because you're so grateful he laid out the money for you. You probably didn't even need that, right? If you had a way, if it was physically practical for you to give him the $4.99 in advance, you probably would have done it. So it wasn't even about that at all. It was your whole gratitude to this guy is because he went against the practicalities of the Shiloh Prince Ribbis. The whole gratitude, let's assume the cases that normally come up like this, I'm just assuming that that's the facts and evidence, that the facts that are usually described, you didn't even need the loan monetarily. You needed him to go to the store to go shopping for you. And that's why you're grateful. Okay, so in that case, so that helps illustrate the distinction here, and maybe that's relevant. So it's interesting. So Ebed Knaini, that is a whole different din. Ebed Knaini is not about shlichus, but it's about what the tashlum can be considered on your behalf. Now, if you want to say, I'm talking about this pushing up before, if you want to say that it's really a kedushin issue, so the Ritva and Rashi, so we could say that too. And we could say that maybe Kiddushin requires the Mamun Haba, and that the whole Chiddush that we have of Shlichus by Kiddushin, that only means that the transference of the Mamun Haba to the Isha can happen through somebody else, and the categorization of what that transference represents can be done by somebody else. But the actual requirement of what Kiddushin involves, the whole idea of King and Kasef, is the Kasef has to come from the Baal. Until Vinnebeb Knaini comes along and tells us that King Kesef has expanded parameters. So then what's the issue between Rashi and Ritva? So there are those, we see now that we're required to invoke this at least once every sugya. Right? So it might be, altogether now, the Sman and the Taz. Rav Guskin has a short reference to that in his shiurim, that maybe the question is the Kesef Kedushin a payment or is it a symbolic kinyan? And then he goes on to say that even if it's a payment, he thinks that there's a svara to say that it should work one way or another. Okay, so that's just in terms of this machlokas. And this whole question we said yesterday, for those of us who were with us yesterday, and we'll fill in more about this tomorrow, for those of you who weren't here yesterday, so yesterday, Sunday, I promised we'll talk about Purim issues. So there was a super synergy opportunity that could not be passed up. And it was just too rich for that category. So we started sharing an essay that was written in one of the journals about the question of Matanos Evyonim Midin Eved Knaini. That let's say, instead of giving Matanos Levyonim to somebody else directly, as you're obligated to do on Purim, you ask somebody else to give of their own money. Right? To use a shliach Matanos Levyonim, by the way, the straight out sense, to have somebody else do the actual disbursement, just parenthetically, that's very much common practice, because some of us are blessed to be in an environment, or blessed, call it the missing opportunity, whatever it is. Some of us are in environments in which we don't encounter Evyonim on Purim, and it's very widespread practice to make donations to organizations or to other people who guarantee you that they will themselves give your money out to Aniyim on Purim. Opens up all kinds of questions about doing this, giving the money to them before Purim, giving it on Purim. That's a whole discussion that we could say more about if you want. But that's in terms of having somebody else do it. That part could discuss the lumpus of it, but that part is pretty much widely done practice. But in terms of what if you tell them to give their money? So that l'chaira would require Eved Knaini in order for it to work. And the preamble to this piece we discussed yesterday also talked about, so it's one thing if I say to Jonah, okay, Jonah, here's $10, give it to an Ani on Purim. And we'll say it to him today. Here, take my $10, keep it in your pocket, and give it to an Ani on Purim. That's one thing. That should probably work. Again, that's very similar to what is very widespread practice today. But let's say I give him $10, and he spends my $10 on lunch today. And then, on Purim, because he owes me $10, or because he already spent my money, he gives 10 of his own dollars to an Ani on my behalf. That gets a little more complicated. So we'll fill in again that tomorrow. I'm going to want to look at some of the overall Orachayim applications of Eved Knaini that we'll We'll fill in a little bit more tomorrow, but just it's important to mention in this context because it does address this question of what kind of things should shlichus work for and what kind of things are Rabbi Tanai adding into the mix. If it's something that is just a function that's symbolic, or is it something that's actual a payment? All of those things we need to figure out where Rabbi Tanai fits. Okay, so that's in terms of these lines over here. So now, we mentioned that we're still trying to figure out, okay, so Rabbi Tanai, whatever it is, how does it relate to Arev, and how does it relate to Hanas Adam Chashuv, and what about the fact that there is a machlokas between the Rishonim as to how these three topics are or are not connected. So, I left off last time, I think, with a chiddush in reading the Gemara of the Machit Rehillah, a very subtle reading, but it opens the door to a whole new understanding of our Gemara. So I know it was very complex. I'll just go over it again. But basically, in introducing the din of Adam Chashuv, before the Gemara says that, let's just look at the line of the Gemara again, on the Zion with Aleph. So the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara has already told us about Arev and Eved Kain. And then the Gemara asks as follows, in the middle of Zion with Aleph, Boy Rav, Heilech Monav Akadesh Anilach. The woman says to the man, and here's a ring, and I will marry you through it. A reversal of the normal process. Mahu, what's the story? So Amar Mar Zutra, Mishnah of Papa, Mukadash, yes, yeah, it works. Very surprising, right? Just a whole reversal of the path of Kiddush, and all of a sudden, apparently, that should work. Doesn't matter what direction we're going in. That's surprising. So Amar Ravash and Mar Zutra. So we're surprised at this, and Ravash's question comes out of left field. It's not the most immediate question you would think to ask. Right? He's not asking, oh, how come all of a sudden on Dav Zayin you're totally reversing the whole process of Kedushin without blinking an eye? That doesn't bother him, apparently. What bothers him is a concept called Agav. That normally, you have a Kenyan Agav as a concept, which means if I sell you land, and I also want to sell you an iPhone, I can give you a land with a Kenyan, and also that Kenyan will carry along the movable property, will carry along the iPhone too. So Kenyan Agav works that the land that's being sold can bring with it, let's make them up in today's Daf Yomi, I think also, it was relevant to the third part of the Balabasra, that, or at least the same Sukkim they're quoted in both places, that if I give you land, then I can also use that Kenyan as a Kenyan on something else. But the main Kenyan has to be on the land, and the secondary Kenyan that comes along is the metallic one. So the Gemara says, according to what you just described, the woman can give the man the ring, imkain havalei nechasim shi'esh lehem achrayus. That's a way of saying land. Land has responsibility attached to it, that if a creditor comes and says you owe me money, he can take the land, and then you have to compensate the purchaser. So the nechasim shi'esh lehem achrayus, land, nicknin im the chasim she'elam achrayus. The other way around. And that's all a very complicated reading. I'm basically saying that the woman here is like land because people are connected to land, other bukash the karkos, and therefore the woman is coming along with a ring. That is the opposite of how agav is supposed to work. That it's supposed to be the kinyan is on the karka and the movable objects come along. The ring comes along with karka, not karka comes along with the ring. And here the woman is called karka, not for any misogynist reasons, but the human beings are apparently associated with karka, as Rashi says. Tosfos argues on that, it's a little separate discussion, but the assumption is people are connected to karkos. So the anan yifchitanam, we learned the opposite. Nechasim she'eilam achrayis, nikdim in nechasim she'eishim achrayis. That should go the other way around, the kesef shtar v'chazar. So Amaleh, the response is, no, me sovereign to Amaleh agav. You think we're talking about agav, that it should follow that rule? Hacha ba'adam chashuv askinan. We're talking about an adam chashuv here. This is not something that applies in every case. The husband is uniquely prominent. On such a level that the fact that he accepts a gift from you, she's willing to make the kinyan based on that. Okay. So the Meister Eloi is mentioned last time he came for Yeshiva Pride. Meister Eloi was Rebbe in the Yeshiva. And as far as really quite a safer, there's one safer we have that should be available at both at the Sfarim store and for download on HebrewBooks.org. I think there's a couple of versions that are on HebrewBooks.org. Beautiful safer. So he explains that, no, Agav was never the subject here. Because the whole concept of trying to do Kedushim with Agav itself wouldn't really make sense. Rather, the Gemara is saying something else. We know that we're talking about a Kinyan Kesef. And we assume that Kinyan Kesef means that the Koneh, in this case the Baal, should give the money to the Makneh, who is the woman. That's the way it should work. Now you're telling me that a Kinyan Kesef can go the other direction? That the Makneh can give the Kesef to the Koneh? Well then, who needs Agav anymore? If somebody wants to sell land, so normally that works with the Kinyan Kesef, the purchaser of the land gives the Kesef to the seller of the land. Let's just do it the other way around. Let's have the seller of the land give the money to the purchaser, and if that works, so then it means that the land comes along with the metaltalin, the money is metaltalin, and the land comes along with it. So this whole limitation of Agav, forget about it. So in his reading, he's saying that we're not assuming Agav was the initial Havmina here. We know that it's about Kinyan Kesef. And the Gemara is saying that, oh, if Kinyan Kesef can go either direction, and that's what's surprising to us. Okay, so far so good. Does that make sense?
Maybe the explanation about when you flip around with the field and then give over the Kesef as well, but what you're saying, like the whole thing is you get some flow.
Right, so normally, Kinyan Kesef is, you want to sell me land,
right?
Like you transferred all of the United States to us, right? So he's representing England. So you want to sell me land. So you give me, I give you the money and you give me the land.
It's different to
that. That's normal Kinyan Kesef, right? I give you the money and you give me the land. But now it sounds like from here that, no, you give me the money too and the land will transfer. So that would mean that you're giving me an item, a Shava Kesef, let's say, a ring, and that Kenyan on the ring brings along with it land. It's the opposite of Agav. And maybe then Agav, forget about it. If Agav is so limited, who needs it? Let's just do it this way. So the premise of the Gemara is this was a normal Kenyan Kesef, and when the Gemara responds, no, don't worry, this is all the Mechashim. So what the Meister is pulling out here is that the Havamin in the Gemara is that this was a Kinyan Kesef. And the Maskana is, no, it's Adam Chashev. So what does that indicate to you? That an Adam Chashev is not a regular Kesef. It's some other category. That you could have thought, we probably would have thought until now, that Adam Chashuv, or also the Gemara, which we haven't really seen yet, about somebody who performs a play or a dance, and the Hana of that affects Kiddushin. Right? We would have thought that these cases where the husband is not actually giving a ring to the wife, why do they work? Well, they work because we saw earlier on in the Masechta, there's a concept of Shava Kesef Kekesef. So it doesn't have to be a dollar bill, or it doesn't have to be a gold coin. It can be something that's worth money. And since people pay money not only for goods, but for services too, so if I perform a dance for you, that's worth a shalakruta. Or if I perform the service of accepting a gift from you and gives you that thrill, so then that's also worth a shalakruta. So you would have thought that's how we got to this idea, right? That Kesef, Shava Kesef, services are also Shava Kesef, so boom, that's why this works. You would pay Shava Pruta to have a celebrity accept a gift from you. That's what we're talking about. So Shava Kesef. So maybe no. Maybe there is another track that this is going on. And maybe any time we use Hana as Kedushin, it's not Midin Shava Kesef Kekesef. It's something else. So this is a point which is discussed by Rav Shechter Shlita in the Sefer Eretz Hatzvi. He doesn't say the Mechter Ilui's whole Iluyishness here, but he discusses that point, and it's a very worthwhile piece to read. So this represents the Sefer here in our yeshiva between the commonality of the Mechter's explanation and Rav Shechter's explanation. But also, it's really interesting to read the two together, because they don't say the same thing at all, but there is this commonality in terms of that Hezbollah that we just said in the Gemara kind of paves the way for what Rav Shechter says over there. If you take a look, I recommend, if you have a chance, to read the whole piece. I forgot the number, but it's called Hanah Kekesef in Eretz Hatzvi. And it happens to explain our Gemara, but a number of other Gemaras, some that we've seen, some that we haven't seen, all based on this principle. So as a first paragraph in Kedushin background material, it's worth reading. But essentially, he makes this case there, quoting from Rav Soloveitchik, that the concept of Hana, if you are being Mekadesh and Isha without giving her a physical item, that is not Midin Shava Kesef Kesef. That's not how we got there. It's its own track of Hana Kikesef, but not because of Hana Shava Kesef Kesef. And rather, he explains that it's Midin Skiris Kolom, that there is a chiddush of the Torah that when somebody performs a service on somebody else's behalf, so there is automatically hischayus. The beneficiary has to pay. And that, by the way, is a raya to this point. This, if you saw this in the Marmar Komos, the Gemara and Daf and Ches, which talks about the Kaddish Shemilda. So I'm not going to go into this right now, but let's take a look. That the Gemara, seemingly out of nowhere, connects that sugya to the concept of how Sechiris works. That when somebody does a job for you, you owe him money, whatever the value of the job is. So is it that every minute he's working for you, you owe him money per that minute? Or is it that when he finishes the job, then there is an obligation to pay for the whole thing? So my focus here about Yeshno Sechiris Mitchil of Yadzov, or Einu Elo Basov. So what in the world does that got to do with the Kedushin? So as he explains there, that there is a concept of Sechiras Poholim, which is a Chiddush HaTorah. That essentially, the idea is that when somebody works for you, you have to pay them. And this gets involved in a lot of other sugyas. For example, there's a concept, the whole discussion, the sugya of Mavriach Ari, that let's say somebody has a lion that is threatening his crops and are causing some damage. And the third party happens to notice this going on and expends effort to chase away the lion, Mavriach Ari, to solve a problem on somebody else's behalf. Is that person able to then claim payment? Say, okay, I did a service for you. I want you to pay me. So that touches on this whole concept that there is some kind of automatic obligation that goes to a person who's doing you a favor. A person who's doing you a service. Now, just from the background here, there is another essay he has in the Sefer about Sechiras Poholim, where he makes that point that Sechiras Poholim is just different than other obligations, that sometimes we have a person agrees to pay money because he made some kind of a deal. And sometimes there are cases where the Torah creates a chov regardless of your deal. And he advances the case there just kind of as an anomaly that Sechiras Poholim is the second category. That it's not about the deal between me and you when I hire you. It's that there is inherently a chov that comes along with a poll. So I remember many years ago when I read that piece the first time, I asked Rav Shechter afterwards if he could explain this based on the idea that we have a notion, Kol Yochel Achzu V'Chatzi Yom, we discussed that a little bit a few years ago, that there is a special benefit that goes to the poll of daytime worker. A worker who works based on time is always able to pull out, always has the upper hand. And the Gemara explains that it's based on the Pasuk, Ki Li B'nei Yisrael Avadim. The Gemara says, Avadim V'la Avadim V'la Avadim. that God says, the Jews are my slaves now after they're taken out of this Ryan, they're not allowed into the human beings. So what does that got to do with anything? It seems that there is a din, it's not even a din in all the Machadero, that it's essentially a cloud that God does not want the Jews to be servants to any human beings. So you're not supposed to, maybe even willingly, there are many halachas that reflect this, that you're not supposed to enter into a situation where you're an eved of somebody else. So there has to be some kind of compensation that makes sure that's not the case. And this has lots of implications. So we get especially worried when we talk about a poel, because a poel doesn't just say he's going to do a job. A poel says he's going to give you his time. So once you sell your time, we get a little nervous. That's too much like slavery. So the limits, for example, how long a person can agree to be a poel for. We can't say that he can't back out, because once you don't let the person back out, we get nervous. That's a little bit too much like slavery. And even if the person is willing, it's not clear that should make a difference. Essentially, it's a dibben of the mulakum, that the Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to agree to be avadim. Maybe it's a little similar to rivis. But it's not even up to the person to decide to be mulakum. So it could be that by its nature, the Torah says, we don't like the idea of people working for you for free. That favor is one thing, that somebody just works for you without payment. There's an inherent din payment that comes with people working for you. You can haggle over the details, what the numbers, what are the perks, whatever it is, but the notion that there's a tashlum that comes with schiras palim, there's a schiras that comes with schiras palim, that is inherent in the concept. So it could be that that chov that comes along, that mutuality that schiras palim triggers, that there always has to, when you do a service for someone else, there has to be something coming in your direction. Maybe that's what hana means. You're a mahana, somebody with a service, so you perform this jig for them, you did this dance, or whatever it is, so that triggers a shibud. And that shibud means that they have to do something for you. So the chiddush is here that works for kedushin. That is not the same thing as shav v'kesef k'kesef, but it would work for karka, theoretically. And therefore, maybe not, at least you have to figure out exactly how that plays out. Maybe practically speaking, it wouldn't work for karka because you need kesef. But the hana component is theoretically there, so that could create kedusha.
Would we need to have a similar discussion parallel to shav kesef k'kesef in terms of whether one would need limud for this? Because I think this is a pretty good finish.
Yeah, it's a pretty good finish.
And once that's being said, if Shabbat Kesef K'Kesef, which is already something that Gemara actually talks about, and there's a whole discussion Ramban versus
Limud. Right, I think Ramban Tosfos and others read about whether there's two dinim in Shabbat Kesef K'Kesef, we recall, right?
Right.
So some Rishonim say you need a makor for the whole thing.
Right.
Some Rishonim say you shouldn't need a makor for the whole thing. Right. Some say it depends. It's certain, so it would probably be somewhere within that whole field to figure out exactly what that means. But it could be the Pasuk, as I was suggesting at that time, that it could be it all comes from Kelib B'nei Yisrael Avadim, that's the idea that there shouldn't be any avdus, there should be that that's itself a source. Which again, this gets a little bit far afield, just providing some of the background, which I think may be under the surface of this day. So, this idea goes on to suggest that that might be what's going on here, and that's why perhaps Rashi says, so for example, okay, Ebi Kanani and Ariv, those are general momentous concepts. That applies to everything. But Adam Chashev, no, Adam Chashev is a din of Sirius Poland, and it works for Kedushin, but we don't know necessarily that it works for other things. Or Ben Hanano, Rashi quotes Ben Hanano, who has a Chiddush that it works as Khalifa, but not necessarily that it should work for other things. Only works for what Chalipin works for. So again, maybe that's because it's not straight out Kesef, it's something that is more abstract, and that creates a Shibud, but it's not necessarily going to be able to transfer it to other things. Rav Schechter also, again, I would recommend reading the whole piece because it affects and brings in a lot of other Gemaras, and Kedushin talks about Mekadosh B'Milva also, and Arvach Leizmana, and other things that we saw in the past, and some things that are later on in the Parak. So there's a lot of background in reading it. But he also talks there, he says that the issue of Adam Chashev, how Adam Chashev works, is a machlokas, because Tosfos on Daf Hey, Tosfos says that in terms of the concept, I think I put this on the Marakomos about the idea of Nosim Huv, Amrahi, etc., etc. So Tosfos here in the middle of Hey and Bay is Dibra Mascha Laha. So Tosfos says, so when the Gemara has all the different permutations of who's giving and who's talking, so Tosfos says, Mashallah Hizkir Klal Nosnahi V'Amarhu. Right, what if she gives and he talks? Why does the Gemara not mention that as a problem? Mishum delob sikale, because that's not absolute. The pinum lekudesha is bad mechashiv kida amar lekamah, because sometimes that could happen. Like a bad mechashiv that we see later on, that apparently is a case of she's giving and he is talking. So some of the Rishonim disagree with this, because you see, what's Tosfos assuming here? Tosfos is assuming that she's giving him something. But shouldn't we say, no, she's not giving him anything? The whole concept of Adam Chashuv is that the Hana goes the other direction. Right? That the Hana is in the giving to someone else. Giving to an Adam Chashuv is receiving Hana. So why don't we call that Nasan Hu? Why should we call that Nasan Hu? We should call that Nasan Hu. He's giving her the Hana of receiving her gift. And that's how some of the Rishonim understand it. That's how probably a lot of other Rishonim understand it. So that seems to touch upon this question also. And also a part of the question is an additional machlokas. Does she have to say anything? It's actually two deis in the Ramah. I think I put that in the Marmakomos, right? The two deis as to what a case of Adam Chashuv. Does she have to say anything? The Rambam says she does. And the Ramah quotes Machlokas about this. So why should she have to say anything? If he's giving her the Sana, why shouldn't it be enough for him to say that Terei Amikudesh is really the Sana of my receiving your gift? So the Taz has the idea there, as we were discussing a little bit during Seder, that maybe normally the woman doesn't have to say anything. But here, there's an extra need for it to be spelled out, because apparently the Taz, I guess, was spoken at his day, when the Jewish people hadn't totally evolved the way they have. His day, not every woman in the world would necessarily want to marry a Talmud Chacham. So, therefore, we need to clarify that she's interested in this kind of a setup. She considers him an Adam Chashir, that is a Hana. Of course, obviously, nowadays, I assume it's pretty clear. But in any event, apparently that's the explanation. So Rav Shechter discusses this in the Sefer. He says that's a pretty big chiddush for the Rambam to just add on his own. It's not in the Gemara that, oh, there she has to speak in order to clarify that she's interested. So he suggests that maybe it's totally on a machlokas the Rambam has with others about the whole idea of Schiras Polim and under what circumstances one actually creates a shibud. This is that since Hana Sadim Chashuv is working based on Schiras Polim, based on the fact that there is a service here that she's getting, so the Rambam of Shitas in other places holds that there needs to be a previous tzivui on the part of the beneficiary that creates that relationship. So that's what the Rambam is being mechadesh here, that Adam Chashuv works because essentially she is employing him. And in order for that to be considered real, that has to happen at her instruction. She has to say, I am now hiring you to accept my gifts, and that's what makes it work. And that's how the Rambam comes to this position. Very, very interesting idea. So essentially, the Maitre d'Ulay, which again I also would recommend as background reading, but he says something different here, but he essentially, there is the commonality that we mentioned, and he uses that to explain again why even, let's say, Arev maybe is its own kind of thing, but maybe Arev, we saw in the Gemara and Baba Basra, it's Machlokas, really what it seems like the Gemara is giving us two possibilities as to what makes Arev work. Is it the Hana that the person gets that their instructions are listened to, or is it a Gzeres HaKasuv, and or is it a Din in of itself then? And maybe that affects the way Arev works, and maybe is it something that is a normal monetary concept, or is it something that has a different mechanics to it, and that could affect also how it relates to these other dinim. So, you know, some of the stuff is a little subtle and complicated, but does it make sense more or less? All right, so I'll just highlight the main points, and we'll have to dive in. And again, tomorrow I'd like to do is see some of the practical. I know we'll have to go to. I mean, have to say some of the. That's okay. I'll have to say some of the practical points of Ebik 90 tomorrow. It has a lot of Choshen Mishpat applications and Choshen Mishpat applications. So we'll go through some of those, and some of them are seasonal. And then we'll fill a little bit out of the chashuv, and then we'll take our jump over to the second part of the parak. So the kids there, we spoke a little bit today about what the Rashi and the Ritva Machlokis might be about. We got into some details about whether shlichus could include also paying for something. The Ritva seems to say yes, Rashi apparently says no. We talked about why not. Maybe there's a certain svara why the Ritva makes more sense than Rashi, according to how some explain it, so we tried to explain why Rashi would distinguish, and we talked about why a distinction might be drawn between the Pu'ulas HaKinyan and the Tashlum HaKinyan, and we discussed how there's a difference when you ask somebody to do something, you ask somebody to pay for something, they're two completely separate things, and one doesn't imply the other, and we talked about an afkamina possibly for Elchas Ribbis in that case. And then we talked also about how the machlokas could be about kedusha, and how our obligatory mention of the tavis and musma, how that also could fit in. And then got more to this question of what all of these sukkahs are about. The apparent machlokas we're showing, to what extent they're connected. The Gemara sounds like the three of them are connected. Rashi sounds like two of them are connected. The Rambam only brings one of them in the monetary context. We talked about the Yehudisha reading of the appropriately named Matrix or Talmud Chacham, who noted that the Gemara seems to be revealing the machlokas here between the question of whether it's about a Kinyan Kesef when it goes in the other direction, or is that going in the other direction, Adam Chashuv, something that's not really about a normal Kesef. And we mentioned how Rav Schechter has a whole essay that works with this, where that is consistent with this, where he explains that Adam Chashuv, at any time the man is not giving her a physical ring or a physical object, that that is not what you would have thought, that comes out of Shavu Kesef to Kesef. That you could have thought, okay, money is, works, Shavu Kesef works, and goods and services are all Shavu Kesef, so therefore it doesn't work only for goods, but also for services. So that's Shavu Kesef. He says, no, that's not what it's about. It's about Sechiras Poulin, which creates a Shibud. We talked a little bit about maybe should that be connected to the idea, some ideas really not even been Adam Machaveiro, of Kedib Neisrael Avadim, 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 and how that's why, therefore, it functions differently, and also how that could perhaps explain the question of Adam Chashuv, is it a principle of Nasan Hu, Va'amra, Nasan He, Va'amra He, Amra Hu, or is it really Nasan He? So who's the one who's doing the giving? Is she giving him a ring and that's what we're focusing on, or is he giving her the Hamna receiving the ring? And also the additional Machlokas, does she have to say anything that the Rambam says she does? Ramah quotes Machlokas about this, and the Eretz HaTzvi explains that the issue might be that maybe the Rambam is saying that Sederes Poulin requires a tzivui, requires some type of a formal agreement to do this, and therefore it needs to be enacted that way. All right, so I wish you all a wonderful day, and so I will be able to send you a few extra makaros to look at in the Torah Chaim context, and I will see you, hopefully.